Money FM 89.3. Best of breakfast. Morning Shot.
Good morning. You're listening to Money FM 89.3. Now time for your morning shot. We've been talking about the State of the Union address by U.S. President Joe Biden, marking the halfway point of his tenure. In addition to calling for increasing taxes on the wealthiest American, Biden also outlined several worker first initiatives as part of his broader effort to build an economy that works for everyone.
Yes, that's correct. The speech comes on the backdrop of the Republicans controlling one chamber of Congress for the first time. Now, he was also claiming credit for progress made during his first 2 years in office while stressing the job is not done. So, for a deeper analysis, we have on the line with us Dr. Lincoln Mitchell, adjunct associate research scholar, Arnold A. Saltzman Institute of War and Peace Studies at the Columbia University. Welcome to the show, Dr. Lincoln Mitchell.
Thank you for having me.
Right. It is the first time Biden is delivering his State of Union address in a new Republican-dominated Congress. And it was quite a spirited performance, wasn't it?
Well, it was kind of an ordinary performance by Biden and a spirited performance by some of the Republicans in the audience.
That's true.
You know, we've kind of grown used to that. You know, someone yells liars, someone else yells a profanity. This is what Republicans do when Democrats make speeches or make State of the Union speeches. And what strikes me about this is that this can't possibly be politically smart. Nobody is out there, even if, except for the base of the Republican Party, that want people to yell at the president while he's giving a speech. It's not great politics by the Republican Party, but they can't help themselves.
You know, Dr. Mitchell, we've been following closely the situation when it comes to U.S.-China relations, especially on the back of the spy balloon or so-called spy balloon, that story developing over the weekend and into this week as well. But it barely received a mention until, I think, the end of the speech. What's your take on that and how it was mentioned and received?
Well, one thing I always try to stress when I speak to non-American crowds about American politics mm-hmm. is the extent to which the American people care so much more about domestic politics mm-hmm. than foreign policy. Mm-hmm. So in this speech, I know rough numbers, 80 to 85% was domestic policy. There was a little bit on China, a little bit on Ukraine, a little bit on kind of broad rhetoric about democracy in the world. But it was overwhelmingly a domestic political speech because that's what American voters care about. And also, when you're speaking to Congress, that's where you can really legislate. Right. Mm. We're not going to we didn't pass a law to shoot down the balloon. Biden made a decision to shoot down the balloon. So the legislation is really emphasizes the domestic side of things. And on China's a tough issue for Biden. Right. I mean, the Republicans, because they're out of office, are taking these dangerously hawkish positions. On the other hand, there are very good reasons why the U.S. and China have some real disagreements now. And Biden's got to stand up to China and assert America's interests without escalating a potential conflict, which would be unthinkably terrible, a war between these two very, very powerful countries.
So what do you make of his address yesterday? What were the key takeaways for yourself?
Well, the key takeaway, which I had always suspected, is that Joe Biden, barring an enormous health catastrophe, is running for re-election. I think he was always going to do that, but he mm-hmm. made that clear. The rhetoric of we need to finish the job is, you know, saying is that's what you say mm-hmm. in a re-election campaign speech. So this did kind of, if I may, informally kick off his re-election campaign. The second thing is that regardless of kind of one's views on politics and ideology in the United States, Biden has, on the one hand, a very impressive record of accomplishment, right? The Inflation Reduction Act, which is misleading because it's really about climate change, right? The infrastructure bill, the CHIPS Act. These are really big deals, but mm-hmm. the American people don't know that, right? They're focused on other issues. We've heard a lot about the problems of inflation, but not about the jobs that have begun to come back, but that will really be created by the infrastructure bill. So this is Biden trying to kind of solve a political problem, which is that he's done all these things and nobody really knows about it. And the State of the Union is traditionally an opportunity to do that. And he very much led with that. And it was, you know, it was not a hard-hitting partisan speech. I mean, the Republican response notwithstanding, this was not somebody who went out there and said, you know, here's a kind of left, center-left Democratic Party agenda. He said, here's what I've done. Here's what I want to do. And that's always been Biden's best political gift, is that no matter what Biden says, and maybe it's because of his age, mm-hmm. His temperament is one of a kind of moderate person. So, you know, where someone like Bernie Sanders or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez might seem like a kind of radical face of the Democratic Party, Joe Biden seems like a kind of calm, reserved, older guy who's playing it down the middle, even if he's leaning in one direction.
We're speaking with Dr. Lincoln Mitchell, adjunct associate research scholar at Columbia University. Dr. Mitchell, I want to get your take on one of the elements of the speech that we've been tracking closely this morning on the show, and that's Biden's renewed call for a tax levy on billionaires and corporate stock buybacks to reduce the federal deficit. I mean, he's proposing this tax that will target big corporations and the wealthiest Americans while protecting taxpayers who earn $400,000 a year or less from tax hikes. What's your take on this? Does it make sense right now?
Well, the first thing to note is that the overwhelming majority of Americans make less than $400,000 a year, right? So this is something that politically is a very easy thing to do.
Okay.
And the Democratic Party, and even to some extent the Republican Party, has moved leftward on these kind of taxation issues, right? The Republican Party used to be, you know, no taxes ever on anybody. And the Democratic Party, you know, under the Clinton years was pretty much what a liberal Republican Party, right, saying, you know, we're not going to really tax rich people. That's changed. And there really is an appetite for that in the Democratic Party. There's no question that we need to generate some revenue. And, you know, as a, you know, you go hunting where the ducks are, so to speak. You can't, you know, poor people in America are overtaxed already with fees and what functions as regressive taxes. So, you know, the line that you hear from a lot of Democrats are the billionaire should pay as much as the person who works for that billionaire, you know, as a in a factory or as an administrative assistant or something. And right now they don't.
Yeah, and that's what he said, right? He said no billionaire should pay a lower tax rate than a school teacher or a firefighter. And part of that, we see this tax on paper gains as well. I mean, we were discussing this with Ryan Huang, our finance presenter, on how that might roll out. I mean, how do you tax unrealized capital gains as income?
Well, this would make it more difficult for people to conceal income, right? And on the other hand, remember that in the kind of post-1990 America, and certainly the 21st century America, people who are rich, it comes from wealth. It comes from wealth comes from capital, not income today, right? So very rich people in America, they're not out there. I mean, yes, if you're a partner at a law firm, you make a salary upwards of $1 million, right? Or maybe, you know, a big job at a bank or a, you know, a doctor. I don't know, so a handful of very high-paying jobs and a star athlete. But for the most part, an enormous amount of the wealthiest 10% of Americans, it's all passive income. And that income is taxed at a much, much lower rate. So I think equalizing that is a perfectly reasonable thing to do. Obviously, wealthy people aren't going to like that. But, you know, and also remember, this isn't going to happen, right? We have to remember that. This is not getting used. We started in the intro by talking about the Republicans having control of the House of Representatives.
That's right.
He is not passive in the next 2 years. It's not going to happen. Maybe if he gets reelected and the Democrats have control of both houses, it would be back on the table. But at this point, it's just rhetoric.
No, talking about Republicans, the Republicans responded to Biden's speech. And Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who was also former President Donald Trump's press secretary, focused mostly on social issues, including race and business and education. So what do you think of this? What does that signal in terms of the differences in priorities? And how might that affect Biden's administration's time, you know, in the lead up to the 2024 election?
Well, it was really striking for a couple of reasons. I mean, first, you know, Sarah Huckabee Sanders was Trump's press secretary, communications director for about 2 years, and was uniquely bad at communicating. And the idea that the Republican leadership looked around and said, you know, this is the person we want as the face of the party at this moment when a lot of people are watching was really striking. But the emphasis on what are known here as the culture wars and what the Republican Party calls, you know, wokeism, which often amounts to just telling basic truths about American history. Like, for example, we had slavery here for a long time, right? Or that this land was initially indigenous people lived here and we killed a lot of them. I mean, to very basic, true, obvious facts I'm sure your listeners know about American history, teaching that in the school. But to me, it's striking that I don't think this moves voters outside of the Republican base, right? The Republican Party would have been better off saying inflation is out of control, and here's what we're going to do about it, right? American workers are suffering, and here's what we're going to do about it. There was a moment in the speech, a couple moments, where President Biden talked about things that seemed so kind of almost boring, hidden fees when you buy an airplane ticket, right? The penalty for being late with your credit card payment, how much drug companies can charge for, you know, prescription medicine. And it sounded so small potatoes, but that's what American people care about. You know, concrete solutions, problems that add up, especially if you're lower income.
That's right.
You know, and instead you have Sarah Huckabee Sanders talking about this, you know, radical left-wing assault on America. And, okay, if it was, you know, AOC up there making the speech, but it's Joe Biden. And Joe Biden didn't talk about any of these culture war issues. You know, the only, you know, you didn't hear anything about, for example, trans rights, right, which is an issue that, that the Republicans have always attacked the Democrats on. You just didn't hear that. You didn't hear anything about curricula in school because that's frankly nothing to the federal government. Federal government has nothing to do with that. So they led with this culture war stuff. And again, it's a part, Republican Party has become a party that has a very difficult time speaking to voters beyond its base. Now, in the current American political situation, the Democrats have a tough time too, but they're trying, right? This was a speech aimed at the middle. The Republican response was aimed at the extreme, and that's not smart politics.
Okay, Dr. Mitchell, and with that, I mean, there's a lot more to cover, especially with the several worker first initiatives that were mentioned as well. But unfortunately, we've run out of time. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. Always happy to do it.
Thanks. We've been speaking with Dr. Lincoln Mitchell, adjunct associate research scholar at Columbia University. You're with Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.